Welcome to Board Game Binge, the place where we bring you bite-sized, bingeable board game content across the industry. I'm your host, James Staley, and in this episode, we're chatting with Luke and Kyle from Savage Games, a father-son design team who are the creators of Craft & Conquer Medieval, a strategy board game that is currently on Kickstarter. Gentlemen, welcome to the binge. How you doing?
Hey, good.
Thank
how
you?
Doing?
Welcome to you too. Thank you very much.
Oh, it is great to have you guys. So this is a father-son team. I think this is maybe the second kind of father-child team I've had on the podcast. So it might be the third. I don't know, second or third, but I always get excited when I can have a dynamic duo team like this. It gets me pumped. As many people know, with Tin Robot Games, which is my company, my design partner is my sibling. So this whole family dynamic, I just absolutely love. I can totally relate to. And I can't wait to spend the next 30 minutes with you guys. Sure. So let's start off first. Let's get into how long you've been gaming. So just before we went on air, I was asking Kyle, I said, you know, what was the first game that you played with Luke? Do you remember? And what was your answer?
Chutes and Ladders and Candyland.
Candyland and Chutes and Ladders. That is going back. My gosh. I know a lot of people often say, Catan, you know, I started the hobby with Catan or whatever, but you guys are going like right back to like,
oh yeah,
it's, you know, I grew up with games and I passed that on to my children at a very young age, probably 4 or 5 years old. We were playing board games for sure.
Oh yeah. Now is Luke your only child, or you have other kids, or?
No, we have other kids as well. Yeah. So, and I come from a big family, and I was raised the same way. I played a lot of games. I continue to play cribbage with my 94-year-old mother right now.
Oh, so, that's amazing.
Yeah. We still do it.
Cribbage.
Yeah. I learned from my dad. I remember when I was like six, he was teaching me how to play chess.
Yeah,
and we have those families as well, with lots of siblings playing games our whole lives. And my dad, now he's getting up in the years, will still go over and I'll visit him and we'll play. It's usually like sequence, or I recently taught him how to play Can't Stop. So, you know, simpler games. Now he's kind of getting up in the years, but you still have that nostalgia of back when we were kids and sitting around the table playing games with them. And, you know, when you grow up playing games and it's an integral part of the family, I got to imagine that this is something that you guys are playing quite often. Luke, how often are you playing games with your siblings?
So I mean, you know, the thing is, I grew up playing board games with my siblings all the time. I mean, we did those at you're probably familiar with it, you know, those midnight Monopoly games that you pick up the next morning, you know.
Yeah.
And we did those quite a bit. And then as we grew up, you know, I started playing in my teens, or I guess early 20s, Zombicide was a huge, like, I'm a Zombicide fan. I actually got my dad on board with it. And so him and I love it. We have how many different versions of Zombicide?
Quite a few.
And so I play a lot with my dad, not as much with my siblings. They're, you know, everyone's got families. They're all out and about doing their things. I've kind of stayed localized close to my parents. And so we've had a lot of time together. Board games have just been that and video games, I have to say. I think I'm split. So.
And then, so this is obviously like a side gig for you guys. Are Kyle, are you retired, or are you still working?
Oh, no, I wish. No, I have a full-time job.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And then have you guys been able to take like any of your kind of like daytime work and inject any of your skill sets into the whole hobby at all?
So my background is architectural and engineering.
Oh, wow.
So some of that knowledge that I've gained over the years, plus playing different games and the mechanics of different games, and a lot came from Luke with his game playing experience over the years. We felt that some of the mechanics that we really enjoyed in some of these games that we'd like to incorporate in our own game. So, yes. Yeah.
What were some of the games that you liked best that really inspired kind of your journey?
Yeah. You know, we played a lot of Risk. Risk was kind of cool. Yeah. Stratego was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. Later on, we got into the zombie side and stuff like that. So, yeah. Star Wars X-Wing.
Oh,
we
wow.
played.
Okay.
So, yeah, a number of different mechanics and just learning from other designers and creators. You know, it's a great community out there to really learn from other people.
Yeah, it is an amazing community. You know, this is one of the only industries where you see so much cooperation.
Yes.
Between people who are technically competitors, right? That are trying to do their own thing. But I think it's kind of like, I've used the analogy of beer in the past, right? Somebody says they don't like beer. Well, they haven't tried the right beer because there's so many different types out there. There's got to be something for you. And I see board games very much the same way, is that, you know, there's so many different iterations out there that your audience is going to be completely different than someone else's audience.
Exactly.
Those two audiences may never intersect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they might have a giant board gaming wall that's filled with all the same games.
That's true. And so what led kind of some of your desire to create your own game? Because that's a bit of a leap, right? Like, creating games is kind of a weird thing when you talk to people outside the industry. What made you want to kind of take that leap and say, you know what, not only do we enjoy games, but we think we can actually probably make one?
Sure. So I'll give you my part and then Lucas can chime in after.
Yeah,
sure. I was actually, I lost my job in 2020, or 20. And I was out of work. And during that time, you know, you have a lot of time to sit around and think about what's going on. Luke was, had some changes as well going through. And then he had a, light bulb moment on Thanksgiving, and I'll let him take it over from there.
So we were at my uncle's house, my aunt and uncle's house, and his oldest sibling, his oldest kids were there. And we all spent, you know, Thanksgiving evening together, you know, and all of a sudden my oldest cousin, he's like, hey, have you ever heard of the game Feudal? And I was like, Feudal? What's Feudal? He's like, well, it's kind of like Risk, but it's really old. And come to find out, it's like a board game from 1967. Like, you know, it's past there, but it has this similarity to a mix between chess and Risk. And you know, these pieces that are kind of like Risk pieces, you know, horsemen or something, but they move in that chess style gameplay where certain pieces can move in certain patterns. And so I was like, this is super intriguing. Well, I was also kind of teetering on some jobs that I was struggling with. I worked for FedEx for a time. I would never recommend it unless people are really interested in it. You know, just saying, I'll leave that there.
Not a plug for FedEx.
Not a plug for FedEx. No, definitely not. But anyways, so I was looking for something else, being creative, trying to look for something that I could do. And with Dad, unfortunately, losing a job of 35 years.
Yeah, 35 years.
So it was a big hit for them. And so I was like, hey, Dad, I have an idea. Why not make a board game? My dad's always been the one. I remember growing up, Dad would have these, hey, I have this $1 million idea. Now, the thing is, I'm gonna be honest. Some of those ideas actually came to life
with somebody else.
With somebody else.
Yeah.
So it was like, you should have pounced on it. No. and so I was like, hey, you interested in a board game? You interested in making something? And, you know, there was this thought process back and forth. And of course, it's around Christmas time. So what do you do around Christmas? Y'all are getting together. Y'all just kind of spending time with each other most of the December season. You know, it's at least for us, that's what it was. And so we were like, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Let's try something. And
so we started with sketches and paper cutouts.
Yes. Oh, I should have brought those up on camera.
Did you harvest pieces from like other games and things like that too? Or,
well, for our prototyping, maybe a little bit, but we went so unique because when I mentioned I also like video games, I'm a huge strategy gamer. My uncle invited me and my brothers to learn StarCraft back in the day. In StarCraft, 1990s game, you know, and I grew up playing strategy. And so, you know, Civilization games and Total War games, those are all computer, but they have a lot of these board game style elements because a lot of them are turn-based. Mm-hmm. StarCraft is more of a, you know, all linear strategy, you know, not turn-based. But, and so when I approached Dad and was like, hey, do you want to create something? A strategy just fills my head because I love strategy. I love, you know, strategizing, planning, getting your troops, moving them forward, you know, that sort of stuff. And so it ended up being, I want to say the first rendition was something to do with walls on a square checker-like board. and you try to get your pieces past the wall. You know, it's just, hey, it was an idea. Yeah. Definitely not what our game is now by far.
It changed along the way. But sure it was, over a 3-year journey. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Over 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And how many changes did it go through? Like, how many iterations? And was there ever a time when you just kind of almost ripped it up and said, we're starting from scratch? Or?
Yeah. So right in the beginning, like he mentioned that wall idea, we scrapped that idea right off. But some of the basics of the hexagon movements and stuff like that, we kind of kept that idea there, but we expanded it into a bigger hexagon tile. But we never really scrapped it. We just kind of kept...
It did go through major revisions. Yes. At one point, if you're familiar with the D&D world, you know, there's a lot of defense and attack and health power and all of these things. And I've played D&D before. I never had the lack of life in order to play it the way I think I'd like to play it. You know, D&D takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of thought process. To be honest, we're in Maine. Maine doesn't have a huge board gaming segment. It doesn't. D&D segments are kind of more personalized. They're small groups that you don't know about. You know, you never know that it exists kind of idea. And so I never kind of got connected with anything D&D related. But we had ideas of like, you know, oh, we could do this with our soldiers. We knew we wanted soldiers. We knew we wanted it to be medieval erred. And so erred, how do you say era in the past? and so we were like, okay, medieval, yes. Walls, no. Something to do with town, settlement, cities, something. Resource gathering. Because I've played Catan quite a few times. You know, the funny thing is, I don't own a copy myself.
We played others.
We've played everyone else's versions of Catan, exactly. And so we kind of just started from there. And with my RTS experience on the computer, real-time strategy, I loved the idea of gather resources, use it to create things, and then those things go out and do something, you know, attack or whatever. And so it just kind of, our game just kind of developed from there.
Yeah, a lot of playtesting. Tons of playtesting. My older brother actually was one of our playtesters with us, and we spent every week we'd get together and playtest it.
And the playtesting, you know, more of a really long conversation with some elements on a table. you know, it would be like, let's play an hour game with 6 hours of conversation in between. That's pretty much what most of those sessions were like.
What is the playtime for the game?
Good question. So we have played games in as little as 20 minutes. That's being very familiar with the game. I would say for a new player playing a 2-player game, it all depends. So our game has a unique function where you get to change the time of your game based on how many objectives you want to go for. So it's just objective cards. And these cards, you can say, okay, let's try to get to 5 objectives. The first one to 5 objectives, that starts the very last round. And then from there, you add up your points. Simple as that. But if you want to play a really short game, all right, let's just do 2 objectives. You know, just the first one to get 2 objectives, the last round happens, and then, you know, there you go. And so the game can be played in as little as 20 minutes or as much as probably 5 hours if you'd want it to. We've done 20-minute 2-player games. We've also done 2-hour 2-player games. It all depends. It all really all depends on how familiar and how you want to go.
So I'm showing it on the screen for people that are watching on the replay or even live. First of all, let me just congratulate you guys. I'm gonna put this in Canadian dollars because it's the only way I can see it, but you're already at like $74,000, which is huge, on a goal of $11,500. So significantly overshot your target. So that's amazing, especially for your first game. So congrats on that.
Thanks.
I see you guys funded in 40 minutes, which is amazing. I know you use Launch Boom. We'll talk about Launch Boom in a little bit.
Sure.
But just, I want to kind of hang on this kind of table shot you got here, which looks just super cool, where you have these tiles with all these little almost beehive pattern, for lack of a better kind of description of the tile has like all these little hexes on it, and then those massive tiles connect to others, so it looks like it can be built out to into a larger board depending on player size. But certainly with the minis and kind of the starting setup, I think you guys have done an amazing job here just for the table presence alone. Is this something that you guys designed yourself, or did you bring an artist in, or how did you create the artwork for this?
So I'm a graphic designer. I have been graphic designing for probably 20 years now. I started when I was in my teens. I actually did a graphic design diploma course when I was going through high school. And I was homeschooled, which honestly was pretty cool. You know, pajamas until lunchtime and then you're done schooling. Anyways, that's the side note. And so I grew up starting with CorelDRAW. I don't know if anyone who's watching is familiar with the CorelDRAW photo suite, but it's pretty much a predecessor to everyone then switching over to Adobe products. And so even though CorelDRAW still exists, I'm primarily on Photoshop now. And so I have been very familiar with the whole Adobe Suites program system. And so I've pretty much designed most of this myself. We have outsourced a couple of designs. Like, for instance, I'm terrible at artwork with characters. Like, I can't do people. And so we outsourced the people artistry, and we did outsource the 3D models just because I do work in 3D, but again, I'm terrible at characters. And so we decided it would better suit our time, me doing other designs instead of trying to work months on months on a single person, you know? And so, our design, all the elements, all the ideas, it never started as those right there that you're seeing now, those, hexagon tiles. Those are the second iteration or third iteration. Originally, we wanted our board to be a giant hexagon, you know, and the thing is, with the way we designed it with 1-inch hexagon, 1-inch hexagon space, it was going to be almost 3 feet by 3 feet. It was huge. Yeah. And so we were like, OK, how do you split this up? Originally, you can cut an hexagon into a pie shape pattern, you know, six equal triangle sides kind of idea. And it's just going to be, you know, hexagon staggered siding, you know, so that it all fits together. But then we realized the box would be absolutely ginormous. And so we were like, I'm holding up right now one of our tiles, but, you know, it's 8 tiles wide by 7 tiles long, seven hexagon spaces long, I should say. And it's shaped in just a bigger hexagon. And so at first we wanted to have a nice symmetrical pattern board, much like everyone else, a square board, a rectangle board, something like that. But then we thought, we wanted the modularity of, with our original board, you could take those 6 triangle pieces and you could swap them around. But we thought, how cool would it be to take 14 of these smaller hexagons and just kind of twist them, turn them, they're double-sided, so you can put them any way you want and just make up your own board. And so literally on our manual, we actually have, you know, the recommended layouts in our manual, and then we have alternative layouts, which just shows a bunch of different patterns of just different ways you can put it together. So it makes it like you're almost like playing a new game every time.
How many combinations is there?
I'm sorry?
How many combinations can you do?
It's endless.
It really is endless.
So our tiles are double-sided, so you have different graphics per tile, and yeah, you just...
Yeah, and you have field and water and trees and mountains on
mountains.
On
mountains, absolutely. We even introduced rivers, which actually take up a whole space, and so they're big rivers with these giant bridges that cross them. So, you know, there's so many ways of like creating. We created this idea that players get to place down the tiles as they want to. So maybe you take turns. Or maybe you just all just decide, hey, we want it to look like this. But if you take turns, you can strategize. Ooh, I want this tile and I want to use the side B and I want to put it close to my area because that's part of my kingdom where I get to lay stuff out. And I want these mountains to block any oncoming enemies from, you know, so there's can be strategy involved inside of it.
A lot of thought behind it.
Yeah.
And then these starting tiles. So is this like wood or what is this like this thing at the end that the cards slide into?
Yep, they are. So it's pretty much a same game tile, But this particular piece is a 5 millimeter thick wood sheet that's pretty much just glued right onto it, you know, press fit. And it has these slots on it. And these slots is where you can place all of your objective and action cards and kind of faces toward you. So it's kind of like a card holder built into the board itself. We are working on or had worked on externally connected or alternate player trays, if you will.
Player trays, yeah. To it collect your resources and stuff in them.
It was going to be a stretch goal. We're not quite sure we're going to get there in this round, but we hope.
And then what I'm looking at, you've got a good kind of graphic on screen here that explains how to, you know, different roles and how to play the game. Can you walk us through, kind of using some descriptive language, kind of the essence of how someone would play this game? Like, what's the basic approach for this game?
So you start with faction cards, which tell you who you're going to play as. They're asymmetric. So they might start with a little bit of different types of settlements, a different type of a soldier, and your starting resources. Normally it's like, you know, a craft point and a couple coins, few coins. And so then you gather all that up and then you start laying out your board. You know, the players choose, you know, they choose how they want to lay out the board. So they lay out the board and then you deal out objective and action cards. You get 3 objective, 2 action cards, and that's your starting hand. That everything you get, that's how you start. And so then, you know, you pick where you're going to start with your player tile. So this player tile I'm holding up, you know, you go ahead and place that on the edge, connected to, it has to be exactly 2 game tiles connected to it, no more, no less. And so then you go ahead and start setting up your kingdom, if you will, by placing your settlements, placing your peasants on your settlements. And so then you see who goes first. Normally we have just a roll. Person with the highest roll goes first. Yep. You know, you could always do something fun. You know, I'm sure there's a bunch of house rules people love to use with that sort of thing. And so then you start, and the first thing you do is you remove your peasants from your settlements and gather the resources that those peasants have collected. And so then you use those resources to craft anything you want, whether it's crafting a new settlement, crafting a soldier to deploy them into battle, or upgrading a soldier so that they're more powerful for attacks. And you can also use those resources to trade for other resources. We don't have any trading mechanics between players, but you get to trade it into the, well, some people say the bank, some people say the stockpile, you know, that area where all the other resources you haven't grabbed yet are. And then, you know, you figure out what you want to do. There's no set limit to what you can do other than soldiers can only move once. They can only attack once. You can only purchase until you're out of resources to purchase with. And then you end your turn by placing your peasants back on your settlements. And then it's the next player's turn. And it just keeps on going round and round. And as you go through your turns, if you've completed what the objective is asking for, like it might say defeated a knight. So I defeated a knight on that turn, so I can claim that objective. So I'd lay it down face up from my hand and I say, hey, I just claimed an objective and that is worth, I think, 4 points, you know? And so there's 4 objective points. I'm ahead of you, you know, like that sort of idea. And then just keep going until you get to the highest number of objectives that you've decided on. Then the game goes into the final round and ends. Add up your points and the winner takes all. So.
And there's combat as well, right? So I see there's combat dice and defense dice. So is your kingdom, is it as you kind of butt up against another kingdom, you go to war, or can you just proactively go and attack someone else's kingdom? Or
you can proactively go wherever you want to go. So really the game is focused on what those objectives lead you to do. So if the objective says craft a settlement, craft a warrior and upgrade to a knight, then you're not actually needing to engage in combat. You're actually needing to defend your kingdom from anyone that's going to come in, so that you can do those things. But others might say, go defeat 2 archers in 1 turn. That means you've got to get out there and you've got to find 2 archers to defeat. There might not be any archers yet, so you have to wait. Or at the beginning of your turn, you get to draw new cards every turn. So you get to change up your strategy depending on what you want to do. So it's very much a different game every single time you play.
Added to that is the action cards. And the action cards allow you to customize your gameplay to what action. I mean, you can lay down a card that makes your opponent sick for the next turn and they can't do anything on the next turn, so it debilitates them. Or you get, you know, there's just tons of different types of actions that you can take place, which just makes the game so much more enjoyable.
Oh yes.
Now you used Launch Boom, I noticed, for this. And can you talk a little bit about that for those who haven't used Launch Boom or don't know what Launch Boom is?
Sure. Launch Boom is like a consulting service, if you will, that they kind of help you from start to finish. They help you figure out how to address your pre-campaign. So your pre-campaign is normally trying to figure out who's interested in your product, right? And normally you do that by a mailing list, but Launch Boom has a special formula that utilizes this VIP style where it helps you to figure out who's interested in a big way. Normally it's by, you know, hey, give us a dollar, you get something free because of that dollar, but then we can register that metric and say, okay, we have this many people that are willing to pre-back the campaign. So it helps us understand, oh, okay, so we have, you know, let's say 500 people who have, you know, backed us with that $1. That tells us that 500 people are way more interested than just the generic mailing list of 10,000 people or however many you have. We currently, so 1/5 of our mailing list became VIPs. And the average on the conversion rate is in between 20 and 40% of those VIPs become actual backers. Whereas a normal mailing list, only about 3% become backers. So 3 to 10, depending on, right? If you're not using a other programs such as BackerKit alongside that. And so Launch Boom helps with that strategy. They help you figure out how to conduct that strategy. They help you with your ads campaign. They brainstorm with you. You get to join in on calls where you're talking with other entrepreneurs who are doing the same exact thing, and you get to learn from their strategies as well. And you get to collaborate and work together and figure out, okay, what's working, what's not working. Hey guys, you know, Meta isn't working today. What's going on? Is anyone having issues? And, you know, everyone will pipe in on their, you know, hey, yeah, I found out this trick or that trick. So it's almost like you get connected to a community of other people who are doing the same thing. And that's been a huge benefit for it.
Well, certainly it's shown in your results so far. And I mean, you guys still have a ways to go, but man, I can't imagine where this is going to end. If you're already at, you know, 74,000 and you still got like 22 days to go, I'm sure you guys will be very happy with where you end up.
Absolutely. We're anticipating it.
Yes.
Have you put any thought behind kind of what comes out? This is your first game. It's been your passion project for the past couple of years. Well, what's next for you guys?
Yeah. If you go back to our Kickstarter page and you scroll down, you'll see something, a little thing there that says
under Why Back Us.
Yeah. Why Back Us. And it says, the Aquatica?
Yeah. So our desire is not just to have a one and done scenario. We want to provide an ecosystem board game where it's always growing. It's content that everyone is on board with. People love that battle strategy, that, you know, turn-based is the board game thing, right? Mm-hmm. Everything about board games is normally turn-based. There are a few that aren't so much, but that's really what people expect in a board game. And so we wanted to fully utilize, okay, how could you turn-based and make it growing, always expanding? And so we have this kind of this idea of like, you might be familiar with Minecraft and the idea of biomes, right? You have all these different, you know, swamps and you have desert and the mountains and the snow. And so that's what we kind of wanted to do here, where you have new versions of the game. So Craft and Conquer Medieval is our first game concept. And if this goes as well as we hope it's going to continue going at, the next game is going to be Craft and Conquer Aquatica, which we're already starting to work on the preliminaries of. And it's going to be a completely different, you know, more fantasy styled factions. And those factions are going to be lizard based, as you could see from the little imagery there. And so we want to do that where they come from the sea and swampy lands, which are not in Craft and Conquer Medieval right now. So you'd be able to buy Craft and Conquer Aquatica in the future, hopefully, as a standalone game, or you could completely mishmash the two together and say, you know what? My friend's got the Craft and Conquer Medieval copy and I've got the Aquatica copy. And we want to come together with 8 players and we want to do this big giant campaign where these lizard people are going to go up against the medieval people, or, you know, so there's all of this growing expanse. And we have thoughts of, like, you know, maybe major IPs get involved at one point in the future. We've thought of, you know, okay, it doesn't have to stick with medieval. evil concepts? What if they're space marines, somehow well balanced, to go up against medieval people and somehow it works? You know, like you could mix and match the game tiles and the objectives, and it would just, it would create something that I think could have huge potential to just grow and grow upon, because I'm a huge fan of growing the same environment, not recreating it over and over as these meme type of things, but actually giving a quality environment. I was always a huge fan of the concept of HeroScape. Never played it myself, but it was a huge game back in the 90s, I guess. And I think actually it's coming back out, if I heard correctly, in the next year or so. And so it's that same concept where you can build the environment, but we didn't want to go with all these 3D plastic pieces that cost an arm and a leg. And our environment tiles are super cheap. I think our one of our add-ons is the environment tile. And it's like, you know, $20, $17, I think we put it at. And that's for 8 more environment tiles, desert and snow. And they give you different effects when you're traveling through them. And so we wanted to build this. Yeah, it's flat. It's not 3D, but it can expand. You could technically buy as many copies as you want of the game and smash them all together. And you could have 16 people playing if you really wanted to. It wouldn't really change the game other than the limited number of colors, maybe, of players.
Yeah. Well, it's cool to hear the vision, the long-term where you see this going. And it certainly can, I think, speak to the quality you've built up here so far. For those who want to check out this campaign, I will put links in the show notes. Also, you could, quite frankly, just go to Kickstarter and type in craft, the ampersand, and then conquer, and it'll bring you there as well. But we'll find multiple ways for people to find this game. Again, I want to congratulate you guys already on where you've landed so far. The sky's the limit, looks like, on this. And I want to wish you all the best in this coming year.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
No worries, guys. You take care. Cheers.
You too.
This has been an episode of the Board Game Binge Podcast, hosted by James Staley, produced by James Staley and Mike Bruner, with original music by Nick Smith. If you would like to watch these interviews live, simply subscribe to our YouTube channel, Board Game Binge, and you'll get access to live interviews, giveaways, and interesting board game content from across the industry. I can't wait for you to join us. See you next time.